All right. Welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon. Today we are joined by a very special guest, our good friend Chris Lepore from UNC Greensboro, one of the Rising Coaches OGs.
What's up, Chris? Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Always excited when we can have people who have really come through our organization be on the show and kind of give back and talk about, you know, both ends of it. You know, you've been in the audience at our events and now basically, you know, speaker status. So
absolutely. It's cool thinking that it was 2013, the first time I came to a Rising Coaches convention back when it was in Vegas. And, you know, you fast forward all these years and to see how much the group has grown is pretty special for me.
All right, let's go down that road. Like, set the stage for us a little bit. 2013, you're a manager at this time, right?
Like, manager, that's right.
Were you going into your senior year? I feel like you were young, or were you just
I had just finished my junior year, was going into my senior year at Belmont.
And with the legend Rick Byrd.
With the legend Rick Byrd. Talked to him about a week or so ago. He was helping me get some thoughts together on how to play against ice coverage and the ball screen. And I called him. I left a message for him on Thursday. And when I talked to him on Friday, he had a whole page of notes for me before we even got on the call. So he still has the bug and the itch and one of the greatest basketball minds I've ever been around. So that was cool for me. But yeah, 2013, the convention in Vegas. We need to get it back there, by the way.
For sure.
That was fun getting introduced to you and Andy Farrell and Gus Fraley and those guys who are, you know, three of my best friends still in this industry, and to see how, you know, everybody who was there at that time, where they're at now is pretty cool. All those guys still core members of the group. And, you know, we've all been fortunate to be a part of some great programs, and to see our careers move in a positive direction has been really cool.
Do you remember, I know this was a while ago, but do you remember, like, I guess number one, like how you even found out about it? And number two, like what your like first impressions were like upon getting to Vegas and checking in and all that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I was just hungry to learn. You know, I knew I was going into my senior year. I knew that I wanted to do this long term. And I didn't really know what that meant, what that looked like. You know, it was at that convention that I learned what it meant. Like, hey, there's a position for graduate assistants. And, you know, then, you know, there's, you could, you know, D2 assistants, D3 assistants, ops positions. Like, I was pretty clueless on how the whole process worked. I was a junior in college, you know. And so it was super informative. I think I found out about it through a summer camp I worked at the University of Tennessee. One of those guys attended and sent me some info about it. But now you can't get on Twitter without hearing about Rising Coaches all over the place. But at that time it was word of mouth primarily. And I can remember some of the speakers. I specifically remember Rob Eason, you know, who most recently was at UAB. He was an assistant at the time. And, you know, he was so young and he had already had this journey where, you know, he was an assistant at Maryland and an assistant at UAB, and he was sharing some of his experiences. And I just felt like the speakers were so down to earth. They weren't giving us some cookie cutter message. Everybody was pretty honest. And that was really refreshing to me to know that, you know, there's genuine people in this profession and so many people were willing to share their journey and how they got there. And, you know, that's still the core of this organization today. So I'm still just as fired up today as I was 7 years ago to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. So you're a manager at Belmont. Did you know, like, going into college that you wanted to coach?
Not really. My high school basketball coach, I was a decent high school basketball player. I wasn't quite a McDonald's All-American. My high school coach, he changed schools going into my senior year, which I was kind of bummed about. But when I graduated, he was like, hey, you know, I always thought you'd be a great coach. If you want to coach my JV team and my freshman team, you know, have at it. And I was like, okay, I think I can give that a try. And man, as soon as I stepped in the gym, as soon as I got on the sidelines for the first time, I was like, wow, this is what I want to do. And so I made sure my major was secondary education. And I thought, I'm going to be a high school coach for sure. And I loved it. I did that for 2 seasons and coaching high school while I was taking classes at Belmont. And Belmont actually started recruiting one of our players, and I got to know the staff really well. And that was when I learned about the manager position. And so I did that for my second 2 years of college at Belmont. And my first exposure to college basketball, you know, we went to the NCAA tournament that first year, had an NBA player, Ian Clark, on our roster. And so, you know, I always share that I was pretty spoiled. First year in college basketball, you part of a team that wins 30 games and goes dancing. I was like, this is the best thing ever. And I knew in that moment that I wanted to be at the college level. And, you know, was willing to learn and figure out how that was going to work for me.
I hate to break it to you, Chris, but you're still pretty spoiled with all the success you've had at UNC Greensboro as well.
That's true. I have been very fortunate, and I agree with you. I have been pretty spoiled.
All right. So I was super fortunate too. Like, I was a manager for a legend in Richard Schmidt, and just like a wealth of knowledge at University of Tampa. Every day in practice, you know, you could learn something new. However, because I was, you know, like a 20-year-old slapdick, I was like paying attention half the time, maybe.
Right.
Was it a similar experience? I mean, you're there with Rick Bird, a Hall of Famer. Were you like, at that age, you probably don't, were you aware enough to know that like, I need to be locked in every second? Or were you just like every other, you know, 20-year-old going in and out of focus?
If I knew then what I knew now, I would have kept a notepad in my pocket and wrote down everything he said.
Right.
I was definitely more like you. I was just like, man, I just can't wait for the drills where I get to rebound. You know, like I just want to get to the fun parts where we're scrimmaging and, you know, there's some action and I can wipe some sweat or, you know, set a screen in a drill.
Right.
But in retrospect, man, there was so many gems that I picked up just being in the gym, you know, whether I was paying attention or not. I was super fortunate and, learned a ton day to day. And it's been really cool for me coming here. You know, Coach Bird was in his 60s and, you know, had won 600 games. And, you know, it was a well-oiled machine. And, you know, they were just winning. And when I got here with Coach Miller, who was, you know, it just turned 30 years old, and it was a total rebuild. It was night and day in terms of, you know, old school versus new school. And so I got to really see something totally different. And I always recommend that to young guys in the profession. Like, it really, really benefits you to see something different than what you're used to. Drastic differences in, you know, the type of players we recruit and the areas we recruit and how we structure things day to day. And so that was pretty cool for me when I got here to see something totally new.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good point. I'm glad you brought it up, because so many people, especially early in their profession, they're very comfortable at a spot. And especially like you were with a legend. Right. And of course he's retired now, but like, if the opportunity were there to stay for 15 years, you know, it'd be pretty tempting to do that. Life is pretty good at Belmont. You're in Nashville. The campus is by far the nicest in the OVC. Should not be in that conference, by the way. for real, like, no disrespect to the other OVC teams, but my analogy to this is like, you know, because I coached at SEMO.
Right.
Every school is like, you know, the campus is fine. It's nice. It's fine. It's really nice.
Right.
But it's like going from like, just in terms of campus, like, setup.
Sure, for sure.
I'm going to piss some people off by saying this, but I don't care. It's like being at a junior college, and then you go to Belmont, it's like being on Duke's campus. It's just like there's big, elaborate buildings. The lawns are nicely manicured. It's just in a whole different league. But anyways.
It's a beautiful place, but I'll tell you this. Since they moved the tournament out of Nashville, you know, that the home court advantage of the OVC tournament is now gone. So.
Yeah, but you guys never won when the tournament was in Nashville, right? Is that right?
Only once when Taylor Barnett hit that crazy game winner against Murray State.
Right. That's right.
That's it.
So the home court advantage didn't translate. So I think you guys have won it twice. How many times in Evansville? I guess it's been there 2 years. You guys won it one of the two.
One out of two, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Anyways, I digress. The point is, you know, a lot of people are very comfortable where they're at and they're hesitant to go out but like you said, the value in seeing, there's so many ways to skin a cat, right?
Especially basketball.
So the value in going and working for somebody else and experiencing a different program is huge, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And coming here, I've gotten to see that. And, you know, I'm probably not the best person for this conversation because I've been with Coach now for 6 seasons. So I haven't done a ton of bouncing around. I'm not trying to, you know, speak against being loyal and things of that nature, but it was good for me when I was young to get out and see something new. The main reasons I've stayed here so long is Coach Miller is just so much fun to work for, so much fun to play for. And I felt like in those early years when we weren't so good, you know, people have this idea, they see the UNCG logo now and they're like, oh, you know, one of the top mid-major programs. Well, you know, walking through the door, man, we were pretty bad. And, you know, we won 10 games my first year here, and that wasn't too long ago. And to be a part of the building process and helping put our systems in place and, you know, to see the guys who stuck with us over time and, you know, our former players, when they're in town, like they stop by my house, come see my kids, like we grill food for them. There's this sense of family that's built over time. And that's been so cool and so special for me, you know, to have had the opportunity to continue to move up within Coach Miller's program. And two, to just see us take this thing from scratch and build it into what it is now. For me, there's nowhere else I've wanted to go. I've wanted to stick with Coach. And I tell everybody when they're asking, you know, like, what's your plan for the future? My plan for the future is to stick with Coach Miller till he kicks me out the door. So that's for me, you know, looking back, I've been with Coach for 6 years. A lot of people would have, you know, taken opportunities elsewhere by now. But for me, the sense of loyalty to this program is just so, so deep, that's been it for me.
How did you get the job there?
Totally random. I had no connection to the program whatsoever. So for you young guys out there that are looking, don't believe the lie of you have to know somebody to get the gig. Like, this was totally organic. I worked Belmont camp my senior year with a guy who ended up getting a GA position here. So while I was a senior, he was a GA here. And he had the opportunity to get the ops job, but the condition on that was he had to have a new GA lined up to fill his spot. And so he was calling me, and I was like, at the time I was like, you know, man, I kind of want to stay at Belmont, or, you know, maybe one of these other local schools here in Tennessee. And he was like, well, I set up an interview for you and Coach Miller, so you better be there. And so set up an interview for me at the Final Four with Coach Miller. And from the moment we sat down, I was like, wow, like, his energy is just off the charts. You know, the other schools I was talking to, it was like, yeah, you know, we'll see what we can do for you. And, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to be a part of our program to some capacity. You know the language, right? When I sat down with Coach Miller, he said, I've got a full scholarship for you. If you say yes, I'm calling my AD and we're getting this thing done right now. He's like, I need somebody who can run my camps. I need somebody who can live in the gym and work out our players all day long. Those are the two things you love to do. Let's make it happen. And I was like, wow, I've just never seen somebody just want to just go get it like that before. And I jumped on it. I called him back. I called my parents. I said, moving to Greensboro. Never been. I'm going. And that was it. Got in the car, moved to Greensboro about 2 weeks later. So it was totally organic, really cool.
That seems to be like who he is, right? Like, no, I don't know him great, but like, that's That wasn't a sales pitch. Like, that's how he is 24/7.
That is how he is 24/7. And I tell people all the time, like, to be in our program, whether you're a player, a manager, full-time assistant, whatever your role is, every day you're just trying to match his intensity, because he is bringing it every day. He has that same attitude that he had in my graduate assistant interview towards everything in our program, whether it's something as small as what are we doing for the team meal tonight, or planning practice, or in a recruiting meeting. He just wants to go. He is go 24/7. He has the ultimate basketball bug, and it's fun because every day, you know, you got to bring it. We're all just trying to get to his level of intensity. And that's helped me grow, because there are some days you're tired now. And I swear, he's some kind of robot, man. He's got batteries that don't lose power. He's ready to go. And so if you come in the gym and you're yawning, man, it's not going to go well for you today. You got to walk in the gym with some pep in your step and some energy, because coach is ready to go.
That's how he was as a player too. I don't know. You probably don't remember him.
Oh, of course.
Is that before your time, Chris?
No,
you're pretty young.
I'm a young guy. I'm 28.
Oh, you're super young.
I know. But actually, as a kid, his 2005 national championship team, I mean, I was a teenager at the time, and I was like, yo, look at this little white dude banging threes out there. Like, that gave me hope. You know, right. I can do it. You know, he's out there. He's in the starting five with like four NBA players.
Yeah.
It gave guys like me hope. So I still mess with him to this day, you know, that he was motivating me as a middle schooler, high schooler.
And that's why, I mean, for any players that are listening or whatever, that's why it's one thing to be a shooter, which obviously he was a great shooter, but he had that energy and that intensity and that scrappiness to him. You got to do something more. You got to bring something else. It's great to be able to stretch the floor.
No question. There's some good vintage Wes Miller film with him guarding Mike Conley from Ohio State, 94 feet. And, you know, he brought it every day on D. He brought it every day on D.
Do you ever bust out some old game film and show it to your guys? Or?
Oh, yeah, of course. Anytime he's on the ACC network, I'll shoot him the link, or, you know, take a screenshot and let him know, hey, I know he's 37, 38 now, but don't forget, coach could go, man. And I'll tell you what. He can have not shot a ball for 3 weeks. He could walk in the gym right now and make 30 in a row. And it's really annoying. Really annoying.
Well, he looks like he's still in shape. Like, he could probably still go a little bit if I had to get.
He could still go. He doesn't play pickup with us anymore because he doesn't want to be one of those head coaches who's on a scooter coaching the game.
Right.
But a couple years back, we used to go pretty hard. And, you know, he would walk in and he would pick his five, and then I would take whatever's left. And you know, whatever happened, we usually wouldn't talk to each other for about 2 hours. And then
right.
after lunch, we'd be fine and start planning practice and be good to go. But we did have some good battles.
That's awesome. Yeah. So obviously, like, he played a great player in North Carolina under Roy Williams. Do you guys get – I'm sure he's heavily, heavily influenced by Roy Williams. Does he ever come by? Do you ever go up there to watch practice? And, what like, lessons are directly, like, implemented into your program at UNCG that you know come from North Carolina?
Sure, yeah. I think, you know, the core – of who Coach Miller is, you know, comes from that program. And he went to North Carolina partly to fulfill his lifelong dream to be a college basketball coach. And, you know, that was like part of the deal with Coach Williams, is he knew that that was something he was going to mentor Coach Miller in. And so, you know, when Coach graduated, you know, he went to play pro for one season in England. But when he came back, you know, Coach Williams set him up on like a month long coaching journey where he basically went and watched workouts all across the country for about a month straight. And, you know, Coach Williams hooked him up with like UCLA, and he did the whole like West Coast and East Coast. And, you know, so he held up his part of the bargain, and obviously, you know, Coach got in really quick and moved up really quick. and you know, was the named the youngest head coach in the country at the time. He was about to turn 28 years old at my age, and he, you know, had the reins to the UNCG program, which is an incredible story. But yeah, I think, you know, the life aspect of the way that we care for our players and how involved we are day to day, and how involved we are when they graduate, those are things, you know, from the Dean Smith, Roy Williams coaching tree for sure. Those values definitely stem from that program. And I think from a basketball standpoint, you know, are some of our practice, is our practice model very similar? Yeah, but you know, we've kind of gotten away from trying to play the way that Carolina plays, because we're different. We have different players, and you know, we press every made basket and dead ball. Now we jump into that 1-2-2 or play full court man, and you know, we're more of a spread offense team, and so we definitely play a totally different style. But I think kind of the core values are definitely come from that Dean Smith, Roy Williams family.
Yeah, that's awesome.
No doubt. And Coach Williams is basically a second father to Coach Miller. I mean, I could walk in his office right now. They're probably on the phone talking about something.
That's big time.
No doubt.
All right, Chris, quick break here to talk about Fulcrum Tech. All right, we're going to do a little commercial. You chime in anytime you want, okay?
Sounds good.
Fulcrum Tech, their logo's up in the corner of the screen. They work with teams in the ACC, SEC, Pac-12, American Conference, and more to solve their video needs while also saving them money. Okay, so Angles is the video editing software. Every program in the country's got some sort of video editing software. You're cutting up film constantly. Chris, you probably have cut up more film in your 10 years of coaching or whatever than anybody, going from manager to GA to ops to assistant. It's like out, you know, first of all, I used to love cutting up film. Do you actually enjoy
that process? I absolutely love cutting up film.
Yeah, me too.
Like, it's soothing.
It is. And you're learning while you do it. I mean, that was my favorite part. That's actually one of the parts I miss about not being in coaching, is like cutting up film. And I've used all of it, like from back in the day when I started, you know, I'm a little older. So like when I started 17 years ago, we used one product, and then I was at the low major level, and we used, you know, we tried to get by on a shoestring budget and use some weird product from Sweden.
Yeah.
And then I was back in the SEC, and we're, you know, back in the big leagues. Well, Fulcrum Tech and their product Angles is kind of new to the scene, but I've done demos on it. I've actually got my hands on it. It is as good as anything out there, and it will save your program thousands and thousands of dollars. I highly recommend you guys check it out, especially right now during COVID times, where everyone's going to have to operate a little bit leaner. Fulcrum Tech, again, the product itself is as good as anything I've seen, and it's way cheaper. So check them out at Fulcrum Tech, FulcrumTech. TEC on Twitter. Shoot them a DM, give them a follow, or email them at sales@fulcrumtech.com. Do more, save money, regain the leverage with Fulcrum Tech. Boom. Commercial done. How was that?
I'll say one thing about video that I highly recommend to anybody, whether you're GA, manager, ops guy, assistant coach, is when you're cutting up film for scouts, for player development, whatever you're cutting up film for, keep a database of your favorite stuff. I've got a database that I've kept from my time as a manager, and I have tons and tons of clips in there. Zach Bovaire recommended this to me years ago, who's at Army, and it's something that I've kept ever since. He opened up his Synergy account for me one time, and he had like 1,200 edits in there. And for me, it's been good because, you know, sometimes we'll be like, man, we we need to put as something in, you know, out of a zipper set or out of a horn set. And I'll just pull up my database real quick and, you know, see if I have anything that I've liked over the years. And so it comes in handy to keep some of that stuff that you like when you're watching film. If you're scouting your, you know, conference opponents and you're like, man, I really like that set that they run, or man, I really like the way they double the post. Clip that stuff up and keep it for yourself. It'll help you down the road.
Great advice. Zach, you talk about a hoops junkie. He is like an encyclopedia.
Yep. Hoops nut. No question about it.
I just imagine he's got like a big library in his house with like game film from dating all the way back to.
Yeah. He's definitely got some VHS tapes. There's no question about that.
No doubt. What's some other advice? I mean, that's a great little tidbit. I know you get asked all the time by people that go the manager route, like, how did you do it? Obviously, you're 28. You're an assistant at one of the top mid-major programs in the country. Just 6 years ago, you were finishing up as a manager at Belmont.
Yep.
What is, like, your best advice, and what do you tell people who are trying to, you know, be on a similar path?
Yeah, I think some of the things that I highly recommend for an off-season can't be done right now. You know, things like camps, working as many camps as you can, and, you know, trying to get involved in AAU, and, you know, going to watch local programs practice and work out, whether at any level, NAIA, D1, D2, D3, you know, Rising Coaches conferences, which you can do virtually. But some of those things can't be done right now in terms of an off season to kind of, you know, try and network. But man, there's thousands of Zoom calls going out every night, you know, from whether it be Rising Coaches or other organizations, tons of ways to develop and network right now. I think in the workplace, the thing that resonates with me the most, and I try to think about this every day for me, even in my current role, is you got to be great and excel your current role if you're going to have an opportunity to get the next job. And I think so many guys, when they're managers or GAs or ops, they just want the next best thing, right? I need to get my foot in the door. I need that first full-time job. I need that first break. Well, I tell our guys, you know, when we interview managers and GAs and ops guys, if I don't think you're a big-time manager, what's going to lead me to believe that you're going to be a big-time GA? And if you're not a big-time GA, what's going to lead me to believe that you're going to be a big-time ops guy? And so now for me, I take that advice. It's like, man, like if my boss doesn't think that I'm a big time assistant coach, or my athletic director doesn't think I'm a big time assistant coach, like what reason do they have to think that I'd be a big time head coach? And so I always say, worry less about when that next job is going to come and how that next job is going to come, and just worry about crushing your current role. And, you know, I think some people can look at my path and be like, well, easy for you to say, you know, it just kind of happened for you. But to be honest, like when I was a GA, like I loved being a GA. Like I loved it. And, you know, the first job offer after that, to kind of take you through how it all happened, when I finished my GA deal, there was no movement on the staff. And so I was like, you know, looking hard at D3 assistant jobs and D2 assistant jobs. And, you know, maybe like NBA video stuff and, you know, thinking that there was no spot for me, but coach was able to throw some money together and create a position that was called special assistant to the head coach at the time. And, you know, I don't even remember what the money was, but you can imagine, you know, as the second administrative position, you know, it wasn't like I signed up for, you know, $100,000 job. And so, but I was fired up. I was like, yeah, I get to stay. Like, let's go. Whatever money it is, we'll figure it out. Let's do it. And, you know, I just wanted to be the best special assistant every day. And, you know, a month later, our ops guy left and coach bumped me right into that role. And I was like, all right, I'm, you know, now I got to just learn how to be the best ops guy I can be. And right as we're getting into the preseason, we had an assistant leave. And it was so late in the year that, you know, we didn't really feel comfortable bringing somebody else in. And so, you know, coach was like, listen, you're going to be the ops guy still, but you're also going to be the third assistant. And, you know, so literally in about 2 months time, I went from I don't know if I'm going to have a job to I'm on the road recruiting. And so it's a complete blur. But it just goes to show you that you can really build value for yourself if you just try to control the controllables and be great at your current role. And I think the only reason that Coach had any faith in me going on the road and coaching our team is because as a GA, he saw me working the guys out and he saw that I just loved it. And he saw that I could help make our guys better and that the guys enjoyed being in the gym. And, you know, when we brought recruits on campus, I tried to be really, really involved with the planning of visits. And, you know, I wanted to spend time with the kid and the family. And, you know, if he needed a ride to, if him and the players needed a ride to the arcade or something, like, I was willing to do it if it was 11 p.m. And if they needed to make dinner reservations, like, I'll call the restaurant. And so, you know, like, I hear a lot of times in admin positions, the whole like, oh, well, I can't recruit, so I guess I'll never get a recruiting job. You can recruit. On-campus recruiting is something you can do every day. And when there's players and families on campus, you have that opportunity to make impressions, not just on the families and prospects, but your boss and your superiors. And so those are a couple of things that I look back on my path and think, you know, if I can continue to focus on those things every day, and in the long run, it'll work out. So that's my soapbox on how I got here and how I think you can create some value for yourself.
No, that's great stuff. And I want to talk about the player development
sure.
and workout stuff in a second. But to your point about the on-campus recruiting, the best I've ever seen at it from a support staff role is Andy Farrell, like no question. And I want to share this because I think it's something that people can like, you know, use and implement. He would go after like the little brother or the little sister, you know, like the assistant that was recruiting the kid is all laser focused on the recruit. The head coach is laser focused on the recruit. Maybe the parents, there's always one tag along or two tag alongs that gets the shaft and like ignored and they're just being dragged along. Andy was great at like identifying, okay, here's the best friend that's like just bored, or here's the, you know, here's the little brother. No matter if they were like 4 years old, he was going to get on their level and make sure they had a great visit, which I feel like you don't see enough of that. And that was a huge, it got to the point where like, that was a huge asset. And anytime a recruit, anytime an assistant brought a recruit on campus, they were like, Andy, I need you. Like they're bringing their little sister. Like, I need you to entertain a little sister. And that's, you know, it got to the point where like, we couldn't do a visit without him.
No doubt. Little things like that, man, create value for yourself. You start to think they can't do it without you. Like that story about Andy, like can't have this visit without him.
Yeah.
People in your organization start to think that way. You're going to have opportunities.
So you mentioned a big part of the reason there's the two hurdles, right? To go from support staff to assistant. There's the on-court coaching and there's the recruiting experience. And you mentioned a big part of the reason you got promoted was because Coach Miller saw you in the gym as a GA working your guys out. And I know it's what that's like from my own experience, sure. Like at the beginning, you're probably just out there like, or I don't know. I don't want to speak for you. You came from a great program in Belmont. But again, like we talked about, like half the time I was a manager, my head was in the clouds. And then I get thrown into like an assistant position and I'm actually expected to like get the guys better. And I'm just like throwing random drills out there and making shit up, you know? And it took me a while to develop my, you know, player development. I don't know if it's a program, but philosophy.
Sure. Absolutely. And
find my voice. Was it a similar deal for you? Were you just throwing things at the wall?
Yeah, it was interesting for me. Like my passion for player development kind of started to grow when I was at Belmont. Drew Hanlon was there, and as a player, you know, Drew was building what he has now with Pure Sweat. Like a lot of people don't realize that. Like Drew had a 500 page book as a junior senior in high school, which was his business model for Pure Sweat. As a junior and senior in college, he had a 500 page book. Like it's mind blowing to me even just talking about it, because I mean, you know, like a 3-page paper burnt me out when I was in college, and this dude had a 500 page business model. But, you know, he was working tons of dudes out all the time. He was working out Vanderbilt's players and Lipscomb's players and our players. And while he's playing on our team, while he's the starting point guard for our team. And, you know, if he needed a rebounder, like I was there, like if he needed somebody to work the camera, like I was all over it. And so I did get to learn early from him, some of the things he was doing. And, you know, I recommend if you're a GA now or a young assistant, you're trying to, you know, what can I do with our bigs or what can I do with our guards? Like, man, just go to Drew's website and you'll see some great stuff. But yeah, it was a lot of YouTube videos for me. Like what does the NBA do during the off season? Like what do these NBA guys work on? You know, what do the pre-draft workouts look like? And you know, it sounds a lot better when, you know, we're running back and forth around a cone shooting threes. And I'm like, you know, this is what Dame Lillard was doing last week rather than, you know, this is what I just made up when I rolled out of bed, you know, right, and got in the shower this morning. So, you know, definitely was a lot of research, a lot of trial and error. But man, those are the fun times right there. That's why it's part of the reason we do it, man, is for those times in the gym, those, you know, late nights, the one-on-one, player development stuff. It's what gets us out of bed every morning.
Yeah, no question. No question. And then the other hurdle is the recruiting piece. And it's one thing, I mean, like you sit in those support staff roles, you probably help put together the summer AAU schedules and you know what,
right,
you're helping coordinate everybody so that they can get to the right gym and watch all these kids, and you're looking them up online and you get your own opinions based on nothing. And you get thrown out there and it's like, there's not much like training for that unless it happens within your staff. But like, what was that experience like just finally getting that promotion and you're on the road and just trying to figure it out?
Yeah, sure. I think number one is when you're in those admin roles and like, you got to find a way to be a part of it. And whether that's sitting in on recruiting meetings and just signing up to be the note taker or, you know, being the guy who handles the database or, you know, being the guy who helps organize the visits, or, you know, be the guy who puts together the AAU schedules. Like, I still do a lot of that because I learned how important it was when I was a GA, when I was, you know, in the admin roles. Like, we need that stuff to operate at a high level, and it's got to be super organized and super tight. And so I still handle a lot of that stuff today. And, you know, for me, it's fun. And, you know, to your question of what it felt like when I first had the opportunity to get on the road, I mean, I was like totally clueless on how it all works when you're, you know, it seems like, oh yeah, you just, you know, you go to this court, you watch this kid, go to that court. I mean, I'm typing up the schedule. This is easy. You get out there and it's like, wow, this is a lot. You got about, you know, a list of like 30 people you need to call now. And you know, it's already 9 PM and it's just like, how will I ever get through all this? How will I ever get good enough to figure this out? And one thing I did my first year on the road, and I definitely recommend this, for anybody getting their feet wet in recruiting, is I started a call log, and I still have the spreadsheet. I could send it to you, but every time I made a call, text doesn't count, has to be a phone call, I would log it. So, you know, if today's date is August 19th, at night, I'm going to go through my call log and, okay, I talked to so-and-so high school coach. Here's a note of what we discussed. You know, okay, I talked to his top 2022 kid that's a point guard. All right, here's a couple notes that we discussed. And then what I learned is, because, I mean, I had no recruiting connections, right? Like, I didn't, you know, my uncle is not some, like, big-time AAU tournament director. Like, I didn't have any connections, any plug. And so, you know, why Coach Miller gave me the job, I don't know. But all I knew is I was going to try really hard. And so what I learned was my goal was I had to make 5 calls a day at minimum. And I would make those 5 calls. And then from those 5 calls, I had 10 new calls to make because the kid told me, hey, coach, you know, it's also important that you talk to my parents. Here's my mom's cell phone number and my dad's cell phone number. And then I'd talk to the parents and they'd say, well, you know, coach, it would probably be really important if you talk to his trainer. You know, here's his number. And then, you know, I talk to the trainer and he's got some kid in a different class in a different state that he wants me to call. And so all of a sudden you made five. Well, now you got 10 more to make tomorrow just off of those five. And so the work starts to do itself for you. You know, if you can stay really organized. And it was also helpful for me because I'd be like, oh, you know, I feel like I haven't talked to, you know, our top point guard recruit in a couple days. And I'd look back and say, oh, shoot, it has, you know, it's Friday. I haven't talked to him since Monday. I need to hit him up. And so, you know, I still do some of that today, but it was super helpful for me day one to have something to go back to every day.
So it's an Excel sheet, I'm assuming. Like, what are the columns? You got like name.
Man, I'll tell you what, it didn't have a lot of colors. It didn't have a lot of tabs. It was just the date, who I talked to, and, you know, one or two bullet points. Kept it really simple. Yep, it definitely doesn't look like you know, the CEO from Microsoft created the document, but it got the job done. And my goal was, I think, 2,000 calls in 365 days, and I think I met the goal. I think I was at like 2,100 when it was all said and done. So
that's awesome.
Met a ton of people, and you know, fast forward, you know, 4 years, and you know, have continued to build a lot of those relationships. And obviously, you know, we all know recruiting is as much relationship building as anything. So that's been super important. But I've been really fortunate. Some of the guys that I've worked with here have just totally taken me under their wing and helped me with the ins and outs of recruiting. You know, the two guys I work with now, Andre Gray and Kyle Bankhead, who have been doing it for a long time, you know, they always have a good piece of advice for me. Andre Morgan and Dwayne Simpkins. Dwayne is now at George Mason, and Coach Morgan's at Middle Tennessee. They've helped me a ton. Mike Roberts, who's an assistant at Indiana right now, has helped me a ton. And so, you know, I always look at it as like, man, I'm working with some big time studs. Like, I better get everything I can out of these guys while they're still here, because all those dudes are going to be head coaches soon. And you know, then it's going to be a lot harder for them to pick up the phone when I call, because they're going to be so busy. So I've had some really, really great mentors in my time here. And everything I know is, you know, credit to those guys giving me chances, giving me time to learn and sharing their experiences with me.
Yeah, you've certainly been around some great people. Some great basketball minds and coaches, but more importantly, like you said, some great people.
No doubt. Mike Roberts, you know, claim to fame is that he still holds the record for most profanity used in a Rising Coaches seminar.
he self-proclaims that, but there's no way that that's accurate, because Kevin O'Neill, like, there's no way anyone's ever going to top Kevin O'Neill's tirade the first year, which was amazing. The first thing he said. The very first thing he said was, turn those fucking cameras off. And then after that, you can just imagine what ensued for the next 45 minutes. Awesome. So sorry, Mike. We love you. You are one of the best ever. But no way you're topping Kevin O'Neill.
I love it.
All right. Well, that leads me to my next question, Chris. Sure. Is, you know, you talk about how you organize your recruiting, your kind of introduction to it. And now, you know, like you said, 4 years later, now you guys are signing, you know, amazing prospects that, whether they're highly rated or not, are leading you guys to tremendous success.
Sure.
Unprecedented success at your school and in your conference. Recruiting all comes down to what?
You know, what I've learned is, more than anything, you can do a great job over the phone. You can do a great job with the families. You can do a great job with their coaches, with the people that matter. But when they get here, they have to feel it for themselves. And ultimately, I think that's what it comes down to. And what I've learned is, all the behind the scenes work that we've done, and you know, all the times I've had Coach Miller call a kid, or, you know, their families, all that stuff. Man, our players and our program ultimately is going to be the decision. And, you know, when you have guys like Isaiah Miller, you know, who's a senior now. And, you know, guys that we've had in the past, like Francis Alonso and that 2018 class that went to the NCAA tournament, Marvin Smith and Jordy Kuiper. And, you know, being around those guys and the families, the prospect, when they get to campus, they've got to feel everything that we've told them over the past, you know, year or two, 6 months, however long we've been recruiting them. So, you know, we're going to use words like work ethic and player development and, you know, culture and family, you know, all the buzzwords that, you know, we'll use in our presentations and phone conversations. Well, they've got to come here and feel that. And so, you know, I always laugh. I'm like, you know, I don't think I'm actually ever going to sign a player. I think it's Isaiah Miller and Francis Alonso and, you know, Jordy Kuiper and the Langley twins. Now they're the ones who should get the credit for signing guys. Cause when they get here, they have to feel it for themselves. And if they don't get the vibe that the culture is great, then what is us saying it have anything to do? So we always say, don't take our word for it. Ask the players, ask them if we care about them deeply, ask them if we're in the gym, you know, maximizing every hour, minute and second that we have. Ask the players how, you know, if we actually check classes. And so we really, at the end of the day, we really value that in-person connection. When they get here, feel it for themselves, because we don't want them to just take us at our word. We want them to come and feel it.
I love it.
Yep.
I love it.
No doubt.
Flashing some, we're getting some comments on the, on social media. So flashing it up there, Coach Mike, with a shout out. Chris, last thing, what advice would you give just to anybody who, no matter where they're at in their career, could be like a 20-year vet, could be just getting into it, trying to get their foot in the door. What do you think is the most important thing that you've learned or that you would tell, you know, another coach?
Yeah, I think for me that the biggest thing that I'd share with anybody is evaluate yourself in your current role. And, you know, like, sure, I want to be a head coach one day. And I have to look in the mirror every day and say, well, am I a big time assistant? And, you know, when I was a GA, am I a big time GA? Like, do they have any reason to think that I'll be a great ops guy when I'm in that role? Do they have any reason to think that I'll be a big time assistant? For me, that's the thing I'm always coming back to, for myself. And I think, you know, going along with that, you know, another piece for me is just always be hungry to learn. You know, I think it's really easy to think you've got things figured out or think, you know, okay, I'm comfortable where I'm at. I try to wear our guys out, like Coach Bankhead, who, you know, like recruits prep school in Europe at a crazy level and, you know, has been an assistant for over 10 years and, you know, is so good on the floor. Like I'm always wearing him out. Like, you know, what are we going to do for this drill? Like, tell me what you're thinking. And, you know, I'm wearing him out every day. And then, you know, Coach Gray, who's been in North Carolina for 20 years and, you know, has signed a million kids. You know, I'm like, hey man, like I had this conversation with the recruit last night, you know, like what's the next step? Like, what should I do now? You know, I'm wearing him out. And, you know, Coach Miller is the best. Cause you open a can of worms with him, he can talk all day about hoops. And so him, I might not be wearing out yet. Cause like I said, his batteries don't lose power. But I think just staying hungry to learn. I don't ever want to lose that because there's so many people to learn from. Even our GAs and like our ops guy is unbelievable with video. I talked about keeping a database. He has a YouTube page. His name's Tom Tankiewicz and, played at Western Carolina. Has been with us for 4 years. And he's got a YouTube page that like documents every one of our games, bunch of edits in there. Like if a recruit texts me and says, hey coach, do you have any clips of, you know, Isaiah Miller you can send me? I just go to Tom's YouTube page and pull it up and send him the link. And so he doesn't know it, but he's recruiting every day because when I'm recruiting, I'm going to his YouTube page. I don't have a YouTube page. So a good lesson, you know, from our ops guy, I tell him all the time, like, his day is coming sooner than later, and he's going to be ready. So those are the two things: hungry to learn and evaluate yourself on your current role every day.
Yeah, and I do want to point out, you do a great job of bringing people along. You really seem to put time into like paying it forward, helping people who are trying to get into the business, you know, break through, meet some people. You're very inclusive. We talk to our players all the time, like, hey, if you're going to get to the gym, bring someone with you. You really do a great job of bringing people along a journey with you.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think a lot of that is credit to you guys. When I'll have a random email, hey coach, you know, saw your presentation, you know, would you mind hopping on the phone for 5 minutes? Like there's a lot of that, but you know, I remember, you know, you and Andy and Gus, like taking the time to walk me through things. You know, I'm calling you. This is a funny story. I'll leave you on this, but I got put in charge of the first ever Spartan Madness, right? Like our Midnight Madness. We had never had one here at the school before, but one of our seniors, Deontay Baldwin from Greensboro, was like, we got to have one. It's my senior year. Like, I'm going out with a bang. And that was also the year we finally turned the corner and won 25 games and made our first postseason. So he was on to something, but I got in charge of it. And so I'm calling, hey, man, I need all the notes from your Midnight Madness at SEMO. I'm calling you. I'm calling Andy. I need all your notes from your Midnight Madness at Longwood. And, you know, I'm calling Gus. Tell me what you did in Midnight Madness at Tennessee Tech. And you guys were probably like, man, who is this dude? You guys took the time, sent me everything. And you know, we're still having that event now. It's like one of the biggest things we do around homecoming weekend. So I always think about those conversations when people reach out to me, cause I'm like, you know, someone really took the time to mentor me and help me. And, you know, it's on me now to continue to pass that torch. And I think that's what this Rising Coaches group's taught me more than anything.
Yeah, well, that's awesome, man. And the most rewarding thing about Rising Coaches is seeing all the people come through the program, come through our organization and watch their progression, and to see you go from showing up as a 21-year-old, barely being able to get into the bar as a manager at Belmont, to now being an assistant at UNC Greensboro, and all the success you guys have had is really awesome to see. So, and it's all a testament to you and your hard work and your character and, you know, your personality. So congrats, man. It's been fun to watch, and we look forward to seeing what's next, what's in store for Chris Lepore.
No doubt. Well, I appreciate it, man. It's been really fun. When I think about getting here in our first season, winning 10 games, and now you fast forward and we won 104 games in 4 years, which is about 26 wins a year. It's for me been so much fun to be a part of the growing process, which is what we talk about every day with our players. And, you know, that growth for me personally, for our program, it's been really special. And so, you know, none of that's possible without the support I've had from our staff members here, and you guys at Rising Coaches. So as always, thanks for having me, and really enjoyed this.
Thanks, Chris.